Welcome to a brand new MMA Roasted podcast. It's me, Adam Hunter. I'm here with Tyler Bowe.
What's going on, you guys?
CB Gold is in Vegas right now. He's going to the fights. Lucky that dude. I want to thank our sponsor, Tip a Fighter. Listen, we got to get fighters paid more money, okay? They work their asses off, the men, the women. They go out there, they put on amazing shows, they entertain the hell out of us, and a lot of them are not getting paid as much as they would like to. So, now we can tip them. We can tip a fighter. I did a show last Tuesday at the Dime Bar. A guy listened to our podcast, came up to me, gave me $40. And I was just like, hell yeah, it was an extra $40.
Nice.
I felt pretty good after my set. I was like, you know what? I'll take a tip. Why not? So I'm sure fighters is the same way. So now you can tip them at tipafighter.com. This week, Aljamain Sterling is fighting Brian Caraway. Should be a great fight. So you can tip Aljamain Sterling. He's with Tip a Fighter. If you like the way Bubba Jenkins fights, tip Bubba. So tipafighter.com, you tip all kinds of people. You tip cab drivers, you tip waitresses, tip valets, might as well tip fighters. They're providing a great service. Things are going well. I had a gig last night in San Diego. That was pretty awesome. I headlined the Madhouse Comedy Club. And all these fighters came and supported.
I saw that.
Yeah, Angie Hill came, and Tiffany Timebaum, and Christine Stanley, and Paula, and Jessica Penny. All these hot chick, badass fighters.
It's
pretty funny. It was a good show. It was one of those shows. There was a guy in the crowd who I think might have been a little slow. And I asked him, I was like, hey, man. So he was like, I said something to him, and he's like, hey, man, you're really funny. Like during my show. I'm like, oh, thanks, man. He goes, you remind me of my cousin. I was like, all right, thanks. That's very strange. And then I kept talking to the whole crowd. And then there were some other people that were super nice. There was an Asian girl right from China. And I'm like, oh, what are you doing in the U.S.? She's like, I'm here to study pole dancing. I want to be a pro pole dancer. I was like, of course. So that was like, you know, a plethora of jokes.
She realized that she wanted to go pro?
Yeah, she wants to be a pro pole dancer. And then
it's hard on that amateur circuit. But once you go pro, it's worth it.
You can tip a pole dancer now for all the... So then there was this guy, though, was like... I was doing a joke about porn, and some guy yells out, "Stop talking about porn!" I'm like, as if now audiences can now tell comics what they're allowed to talk to.
Yeah.
So then I was like, I ignored him. I made one joke and went back because I was having a good set. It's one thing when you're kind of struggling and someone yells it out, but
yeah.
I don't want it. There was about 200 people there, and I don't want to sacrifice everyone else's good time for one person's dumb. So then he goes, "You better need security." He's like, "You better have security after the set." And I was like, "I do. I have 5 MMA fighters, badass chicks in the back." And they're like, "Woo!"
Nice.
That's what I do. I travel with 5 girls, and at the end, we do reverse bukkakes. Which was, I'm like, I just get in the middle, and they squirt. It was like, and it was, I don't even know if they even know what that meant, but the guys were dying laughing. There were a couple Marines there. They were having a great time.
I'm sure there was a few people that knew what you were talking about.
But it was a fun show. It was great seeing those chicks. It was a blast. I had a blast. I love supporting the female fighters, and then when they come and support me, it's pretty damn awesome. Angie's the champ now. Jessica's fighting, and we're going to go to that fight. I'm still working on tickets, but we're going to go.
Let's do it.
Jesse's fighting in L.A. At the UFC 199. And Paulina, she just fought for Combate America, and Christine Stanley wants to fight Andrea Lee. This girl Christina, she hits hard. She beat this girl Shannon Sinn. It was cool. It was a cool, like, and Tiffany Timebaum is smoking hot. She's a fucking smoke show, cool ass fighter. She's going into MMA. She's fighting in Invicta, and she's the nice. She's the kickboxing champion. So it was really cool seeing her too. It was just I like it. It's just funny though. Like, it's funny when people say that, like, whatever. But it was in the beginning, people were like, "You're so bad for women's MMA." I'm like, really? Like, they're the ones supporting me the most. They're the ones who are coming on the. I think our podcasts have more female fighters than anybody.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, right? I mean, we're the ones supporting all the chicks and all the females and the badass female fighters. I mean, give me a break. It's just funny sometimes that people think that you could only promote something one way.
Yeah.
You know, I have Shannon Knapp, the head of Invicta, saying, "Hey, we got a fight card coming up. Can you promote some of my girls?" Of course I can. She's like, "You're the best." She gives me tickets to all the events. It's funny because sometimes you don't have to go. There's unconventional ways of getting things done. And for me, you know, I love making people laugh. I love doing the podcast. But also I love supporting female fighters. But I do it in a way where it's entertaining through comedy. It doesn't necessarily have to be an interview where it's just the straight standard.
How'd you get into fighting? What makes you fight? What was it like your first fight? How's your training camp going?
I mean, those questions are fine to ask, but there are other ways that you can get people interested in things too.
Yeah, well, that's a good way to get to know about the fighter, but I think the way that we interview and have guests on is a good way to get to know the person. Mm-hmm. And that's how fans, I think, how, you know, you appreciate the fighting style in the cage, but you really get behind a fighter when you get to know them a little bit and you see their personality and you kind of get to know who they are as a person. Like, I mean, there's tons of fighters out there that I respect their skill, but like the guys and the girls that I really get behind are the ones that I think are cool people.
Exactly. So, all right, I'm going to get off my soapbox for a second. We got a big fight that was announced today. Jake Ellenberger, the former co-host of the MMA Roasted podcast, a dear friend of mine, is fighting Matt Brown, the immortal.
Yeah.
This is going to be a good fight, UFC 201. You know, I think it's a good fight for Jake. I do. You know, some people are already writing off Jake Ellenberger. They're saying, oh, Jake's going to die, this and that. First of all, Jake Ellenberger hits hard. Hits really hard. He's got great wrestling when he uses it. Matt Brown, it seems like the one thing that his Achilles heel has been wrestling. Mm-hmm. I mean, Damian Maia kept taking him down. Johnny Hendricks kept taking him down. I think this is a winnable fight for Jake. Jake Ellenberger, I mean, we're forgetting about Jake Ellenberger, and I'm not, but he's the guy that knocked out Jake Shields in 30 seconds. He's the guy that knocked out Nate Marquardt. He's a beast of a man. Yet granted, his last couple fights have not gone his way. He's also fought Robbie Lawler. The Kelvin Gastelum, I think, was a brain fart. The Stephen Thompson was terrible game planning, you know. But also a very, very hard guy to fight in Stephen Thompson. And Tarek Safradine, he had Tarek hurt. He didn't capitalize it. He also had Thompson hurt. Didn't capitalize on it. I think Jake, if the best Jake Ellenberger shows up, he can win this fight. That being said, if the Jake Ellenberger that showed up in his last couple fights goes up against Matt Brown, it's not good. No bueno.
No, he's got to come out. Both these guys have their work cut out for them. This is it's a huge fight, I think, for both of them, because Matt's coming off a loss with Maia, and he just got smothered by Maia, and Jake needs to have a decisive win. But I think this fight has fireworks all over it. I think both these guys are going to come out slugging because they want to win, and they want to win in like
it's also,
a big
I think
way.
Jake can't get cut here. I mean, if Jake loses, it's going to be rough for him to make a case for him and why he should still be in the UFC or he'd still be fighting. So this is a do or die for Jake. He's a young guy. He's 31 years old, and hopefully this is the fight. You know, I know he's been training. He says camp's going really good. He's no longer with Edmund, so that's 100 points right there in his direction. And I'm excited for this fight. I'm also excited for the Stipe Miocic All-Star Overeem fight that got announced.
Yeah.
I think I got Stipe all day long.
Yeah.
Overeem, you know, is a problem for any heavyweight, not just Stipe. But I think Stipe's got this. I think Overeem, you know, he got busted for steroids, and I still think that mentally he is not as strong as Stipe Miocic.
Yeah.
Without the juice, without the this, without that. I know he beat Dos Santos. I know that he, Overeem, he won his last fight against, who did he beat?
He just fought Arlovski.
Arlovski. He wasn't looking great during that fight. Caught him, but wasn't looking great. And I think Stipe wins this fight. I think Stipe wants that title. He has the title. Is not going to lose it, and I like Stipe.
Yeah, it's nice to see a quick turnaround too in a heavyweight fight, because some of the fights have been so drawn out. So I mean, I hope they both stay healthy with their training camp and this fight goes down as planned. But yeah, I think Stipe takes it. I picked against him on the last fight against Verdum just because I thought it was going to be a little bit too much for him to handle, and I thought Verdum was a little bit more crafty. But man, he certainly caught him and he looked phenomenal. So
I think Stipe's got the advantage in boxing and wrestling. On the ground, I don't know about Overeem's ground game. I don't think it's that great, but I think Stipe's probably better on the ground overall. In kicking, you got to give it to Overeem. He was a K-1 champion, but you know he could always win with those fucking kicks to the side. I mean, look, buckled Brock. Look how big Brock was.
Yeah,
but that was not the same Brock Lesnar that fought Mir 2. That was like that was like diverticulitis Brock Lesnar who was found Jesus, and it was reminding me of like Joe Boo in Major League 2 when he just didn't have that fire that he had in him whatever. So, so that's good. So BJ Penn since our podcast on Monday. He failed a test, but he failed an IV test. So he was taking IVs, and you know what? Come on. I understand you're taking steroids, you're out. You got too much TRT in you, testosterone, you're out. IVs? Really? Come on.
Also, I understand the IV ban for the sake of weight cutting and rehydrating for pre-fight, but this is, how far out is, he was...
2 weeks, 3 weeks out.
Yeah, still a couple weeks out from a fight. And so he claimed he didn't know that you couldn't use IVs year-round, and yeah. I would say, I didn't know that as well, because...
I didn't know either, and you know what? I'm not even sure if I think diuretics should be even banned, to be honest, or, like, to lose weight. I understand that, like, you know, they could be used as masking for steroids and stuff like that, so I guess you have to ban them, but I just don't put a weight-cutting pill that you're taking to lose weight on the same level as something you're taking to take steroids. I don't see it, and people go, well, drug is a drug. No, it's not. Marijuana is not the same as heroin. It's not the same as crack. It's not the same. And to give someone a year ban because you're taking a pill to lose water weight to make a weight class is not the same as taking, you know, HGH.
Yeah.
To,
no, absolutely.
To give yourself an advantage. Did, you know?
Did he get popped for diuretics
no,
or just
he
the
didn't.
IV? Okay.
He didn't. But even IV, I put it even less than that.
Yeah.
I don't
yeah.
even put the IV on the diuretic scale. What are we doing here, people?
I wonder why, like, why you use an IV just like on a regular training day, like just to rehydrate or?
Probably to rehydrate. It's probably a bad weight cut for him. I think he's cutting to 45, right? What is he cutting to?
I mean,
he's a guy that goes up and down. He's up in weight. I don't think he should be fighting anyway. He doesn't want to fight in 6 years.
Yeah.
To be honest, I like BJ Penn. I want to remember BJ Penn as the guy that beat Sean Sherk, the guy that beat Matt Hughes, the guy that, you know, fought GSP twice in those fights. That's the BJ Penn that I want to remember. I was at the BJ Penn Frankie Edgar fight, and it was painful to watch.
Yeah.
It was disturbing, and it was not fun. And you're like, come on, it's not good. It's like seeing a chick. It's like looking at Nicole Eggert now.
Oh.
Have you seen Nicole Eggert?
I think I've seen pictures of her a while ago.
Have you seen her Blown Away back in the day and her Charles in Charge days? I mean, I was the same age as her, so it wasn't pedophilia. But I'm saying Nicole Eggert and Baywatch was fucking, I mean, she was one of the all-time greats.
She was America's sweetheart.
Unbelievable. And now she works a food truck. She has a food truck business, and she looks like she ate all the food. And would I still hit it? Maybe. But I would have to have Baywatch on in the corner so that I could be watching Baywatch while sleeping with her. By the way, I have a girlfriend now. So, of course, I have a girlfriend, and I'm totally, you know, loyal. And, of course, the Asian porn star from China comes up to me and goes, what are you doing later? You're very handsome. I'm like, thank you. You're very sweet. But and that never happens when I'm single. I never get the girl from China who wants to be a pole dancer coming up to me. But
you're being tested.
Of course I'm being tested. But my girl, I had one girl that was, like, sending me Snapchat pictures, like, and I'm like, I go, listen, I have a girlfriend. Please stop sending me this. Because
mm-hmm.
I don't even want my phone out. And then my girlfriend even seeing that shit.
Yeah.
Plus, it's like, I don't get off on naked pictures from girls directly. Maybe I'm spoiled, but a girl sends me a pic of her and her tits or something. I'll look at it. I'm a man, but it's not like I'm going to go jerk off to that fucking shot, you know?
You need videos. You need
I need the actual person.
You need the actual person.
I mean,
there you go.
If we're Skyping, I could sort of doing it because it's an actual person, but I'm not into like, oh, a boob shot. Ooh, I don't know. It just doesn't do it for me.
Yeah.
I'll look. It's hot.
How far back in your life would you have to think to the point where you could just use your imagination to like get off?
Well, I stopped watching porn. And like the last, I haven't watched porn in like 2 months. My therapist said that maybe you should just quit watching porn.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a huge problem. I wasn't like watching porn. I was doing it like twice a week, you know, and nothing that was crazy. But she was like, you know what, maybe, you know, so I'm no longer watching porn at all. I haven't even masturbated in like, but I got jerked off once in the past 2 months. I don't know. I'm saving it for the girl.
There you go.
You know, she does it for me.
That's good, man.
Yeah. You?
Team player.
You still watch porn. You're a freak.
Occasionally.
Yes. It's funny. Everyone I know who's like a straight edge guy who is like all about like, they're always the biggest freaks that I know.
I'm not the biggest freak that you know.
You're up there, man. You're a complete freak. So Nate Diaz, Dana White went to go visit Nate Diaz in Stockton. And then, you know, he said, I've been in better places or something. And it got blown out to like the, it went crazy. It was a terrible
hating on Stockton.
Yeah. But I guess after hearing Nate talk, look, Nate Diaz just wants the same amount of money, if not more, than McGregor. And he should have got that.
Yeah.
He won. I think in the rematch, the winner should get more than the loser. I don't care if the loser's a draw. The winner should get more. It's just, that's my opinion. And give Nate what he wants. I mean, Nate Diaz has brought so many fans into it.
He's, I think he had a huge fan base going into that fight, and that certainly elevated him to beat McGregor. And I know, you know, I know that McGregor's huge. He's a huge draw. He did a lot to propel the sport forward and the company forward and all that. So I don't think that he doesn't deserve the money that he's getting, but I think absolutely Nate deserves. And plus, look at all the years that Nate's put in for the company, and he's been fighting the best of the best for years and years, and he keeps bringing this up, you know?
Yeah, I mean, look.
Give him a payday.
Is Conor McGregor bringing more fans than Nate Diaz? Yes. I mean, he brings the whole country, you know? Nate doesn't bring... But, you know, I think he does. He brings in more fans. More people come up to me, they go, hey, man, who's that Irish guy? They're not saying who's that Stockton dude, you know?
Yeah.
But at the same time, does Nate deserve more money? It's a lot about, like, to me, I'm more about what guys deserve.
Yeah.
And, you know, Nate has fought better guys. He has beaten better guys. He has, I mean, he did beat Cowboy Cerrone. He did beat, you know, Melvin Gallaro when Melvin was at the top. Well, you know, he did win the Ultimate Fighter. He fought the Rory McDonalds of the world. I mean, he fought a lot of guys. You know, he's lost some fights. He lost Dos Anjos, but he fought better guys. You know, the best guy on Conor's resume was Chad Mendez, but that wasn't a healthy 100% Chad Mendez. That was a 2-week Chad Mendez. Conor did knock out Poirier.
Aldo.
He did knock out Aldo. Yeah, maybe you can make the argument that Aldo. Yeah, maybe you're right. Okay, fine. He did beat Aldo in 8 seconds. Okay, yeah, fine. Yeah. I don't care. Nate's been around longer, and Nate won. If Nate lost, we're not having this conversation.
Yeah.
But Nate won, and Nate beat the draw. So, and by the way, this whole Conor McGregor Mayweather thing, who wants this? I don't know anybody except for hardcore boxing purists that want to be like, see, boxing's better than the UFC, or like whatever, that want this fight. There's not one MMA fan that I know that wants to see this fight. Will they watch it? Yes. Should Conor take it? Hey, look, for $50 million, if they really are offering him $50 million to fight Mayweather, I say do it. $50 million?
In what, a boxing match or an MMA match?
A boxing match. Will he lose? Yes.
Yeah.
But you know what? He lost to the best fighter in the world at that guy's sport, the best boxer in the world. So it's like, Conor's pretty smart. It's like, he fights Nate Diaz. He goes, yeah, I lost, but I went up to 170. I didn't lose to a guy my weight.
I kind of object a little bit to that argument, because they did hold the fight at 170, but you got to look at that as Nate fights at 155. So I look at Nate as a 155 pounder. And of course he walks around at more than that, but so does McGregor. So he went up in weight for sure, but I don't look
I'm
at
not
that.
Say, I'm yeah. not saying I totally agree with you. I'm yeah. saying what's going on in Conor's mind. I was at that fight. After Conor lost that fight, he said, hey, man, I just can't fight these guys. They're just too big for me. And then, so he gave himself an out.
Yeah.
And then he signed it again. Because I think in his mind, it's like, okay, it's like me hitting on, you know, a Victoria's Secret model. When I was in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, doing for a comedy for the military, I was there with a couple of comedians, and there were three Victoria's Secret models there. Adriana Lima, Salida Eubanks, and Marissa Miller. And of course I hit on them. Okay? Because if I end up getting dissed, I got dissed by Adriana Lima. Oh. I didn't get it. And you know what? They were still charmed by me because I was going with the balls enough to hit on them. And I think Conor has that same mentality of like, yeah, I got rejected, but I lost to Nate Diaz in his weight class.
Yeah.
Yeah, I lost to Mayweather, but I lost to Mayweather in boxing. And now I'm $50 million richer. So I do think that he has that mentality. It's like if I do a roast battle, right? I'm not going to go against somebody who's works at the comedy store who could make a name off beating me. But if I go against Joe Rogan, I'll go against Joe Rogan in a roast battle. I lose to Joe Rogan.
Yeah, or Jeff Ross. Or...
Jeff Ross. I lose to Jeff Ross. Okay, ooh, I lost Jeff Ross and Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
You know, I lost to Doug Stanhope. Oh, you know, yeah, you know, those are the guys that I would go against because to me, it's not really losing. Now, granted, people watching it go, yeah, you got your ass kicked by Jeff Ross, or you got your ass kicked by Joe Rogan, or you got your ass kicked by Mayweather. But in his head, yeah, he's like, fuck it, you know? And I understand where he's coming from. By the way, that Guantanamo thing, it got even funnier, that story. So we had to stay an extra day because we go to Cuba, perform for the troops. It was me, Rodney Perry, Nima Williams, Frank Nicotero. We did a show for the troops, military, right? And then we got banned from talking to the models because Nima Williams went up to Salida Eubanks. What happened was all these guys were online to talk to, take a picture with the supermodels. So yeah. I go, Marissa, can I take a picture with you? She goes, sure. So I gave her my camera and had her take a picture of me and my friend. And she laughed and she's like, hi, I took a picture with her. Everyone had a good time. And then the girls were like, oh, I want to come to your show. And then Nima talks to Selena and he's like, yo, can I take a picture with you? Does my thing, the same joke I did. And then he goes, I'm going to cut out the mouth later and fuck it. And then she got pissed. So we weren't allowed to talk to him anymore.
Yeah.
But we stayed an extra day. So we go to visit the prisoners, right? They took us to the actual jails of where the Guantanamo Bay prisoners were at. And there were like soccer fields where they play soccer. They were trying to make it seem like it was right after that whole bus thing of like torturing went down. So they're like, oh, they have it so great. They get meds. They get three meals. They show us this flat screen. They love to watch the deadliest catch. They started telling us how great the prisoners had it, right? And it was funny because we actually went in one of their cells. They weren't there. But Nima, who's been to jail before, was like, man, I was in prison. My cell, well, this is bigger than my cell, right? So while they're telling us how great they have it, I'm like, I should move in here. And the guy's like, they don't have it that great. There's a guy, one of the prisoners, is on the window, banging on the window, like, help, help, just fucking going crazy. And I'm like, yeah, that guy doesn't look too happy.
Yeah.
So they're giving us that tour while there's a guy in the corner screaming help. But they had lawyers with them. They actually had American lawyers representing them in Guantanamo Bay. What a fucking crazy thing that was.
Jeez.
And then driving around Cuba, right? There are these huge iguanas, mm-hmm. like humongous, not like little iguanas, like, I don't know, 4 foot iguanas. And they're endangered species. So they're always walking across the street and you're not allowed to hit them with your car. Not that you'd want to.
Yeah.
But like they'll hold up traffic for like an hour and a half because you can't, some of the roads are a real thing and you can't hit them. It was pretty funny. It was like, imagine being late to work because a fucking iguana takes a nap in the middle of the street.
Yeah, yeah. It's that iguana, that rush hour iguana traffic.
It was crazy. So, yeah. Anyway, I'm excited for this weekend. I got a show in Tonopah, in this mining town in Nevada. It's 2 hours north of Vegas, and it's the World Arm Wrestling Championship in the town. And I'm going there. I guess the whole town's coming, and it's a big door deal. But then it's like I'm thinking about going to Vegas afterwards on the way back. It's Sunday night.
Wait, so it's everybody in the town arm wrestles, or it's the World Arm Wrestling Championship?
It's held there that weekend. But I was thinking about like after the show, the show's over at like at 8:30, just going to Vegas and going to like an after party or something.
Yeah.
I should, right? Because Cody's fighting. You know they're going to have an after party. Jessica or Sarah McMahon.
You get there by... What? If you get to Vegas at 10:30, that's just getting started in
Vegas. Right? I should do that.
Yeah.
It's that Memorial Day weekend.
Absolutely, man.
It just sucks having a girlfriend, though, man. It doesn't suck. I mean,
is she going on the road with you?
No, but it sucks. I'm not like those kind of trips. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You know, it's all good. It's great having a girlfriend, especially when it comes to Vegas trips on Memorial Day weekend. I'm actually doing that show. I'm not doing the high school reunion.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, I saw that. That's awesome. You're going to do the Laugh Factory show with Joe Rogan and...
No, not Joe Rogan. Brian Callen. David Spade.
Dana White's going to be there,
right? Dana White. Matt Sarah. Excited about that. That should be fun.
That guy's hilarious.
But it was cool. And then the Dime Bar was really great. Although, another thing where like a friend of mine came to my show and he's very loud and in every joke he tried to chime in and like tell me, oh, that one's good, or that's not. And I'm like, and it's a buddy of mine who I invited.
Yeah.
So I was like, yo, John, I got this, you know.
That's always the worst when people, like other comics are like, hey, dude, who's the people over a table, you know, that table? And you're like, that's my family, or that's my friends.
It's the worst. I mean, my favorite way to deal with a heckler is the rope-a-dope strategy, where you know, a guy heckles you, and you give him a little back, like, oh, you know, all right, thank you, sir. What do you do? Make something, a light jab back.
Yeah.
And he thinks he won.
Yeah.
And then you go back to your set, make everyone laugh. And at the very end of the show, you just pile on him.
Yeah.
You just boom, 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 boom. Because he's not expecting it.
Yeah.
He thought he already got one off on you. And then you just fucking, you know, machine gun him with jokes. And then thank you. That's my time. That's my favorite way to deal with that.
Guarantee you get the last word.
Oh, always. Always. That's my favorite way.
I usually use the Roadhouse Patrick Swayze technique,
where
I try to be nice as long as I can until it's time to not be nice.
Mm-hmm.
And then just be mean.
Sometimes I'll take a survey. Like, if I'm having a good set, and somebody heckles me, I'll be like, who here likes my set? And everyone's like, woo! Who here doesn't? And the one guy, but usually he cheers on like team one.
Yeah.
I'm like, you can't all of a sudden join team one.
Yeah.
And then I'll be like, all right, sir, you've been rounded off. You know, that kind of...
Yeah.
The problem is I've seen that happen before where, like, no one actually cheers. I've seen sometimes the heckler win with comedians. That's the worst.
Ugh, that's dangerous.
That's dangerous. You are kind of taking a risk there. The worst, though, is also when someone's being, like, they're laughing too hard or they're being nice with their heckles because it's still fucking up your set of your flow.
Yeah.
They think they're helping. And then, or they'll say something, you'll say something back, you'll get a huge laugh, and then they think they got the assist. Like, it was their...
Yeah, partial credit.
Yeah, it was their heckle first that enabled you to come back and get the big laugh. And you're like, no. Very rarely do I want that. Sometimes I don't care if people heckle, if it's like, it's just one of those late night sets where everyone's kind of in a goofy mood and it's like, whatever. But for the most part, it's like, come on.
I love it when you're about to do a show. Maybe you're standing at the bar or something like that in like a club that doesn't have a green room. And someone comes up and they know that you're a comic. And they'll be like, hey, don't fuck with me, man. Don't fuck with me, all right? It's my birthday, but don't fuck with me. And then they're the ones that yell at you during the show. Always.
Or they ask you to do jokes about them. Hey, man, it's my birthday. Can you make jokes about me? No, dude, I can't. Then you feel like a dick for saying no.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, hey, I'll like see what I can do. But like Steve Hofstetter, who was my first roommate, he made he has millions and millions and millions of hits off hecklers. And I watched that and I'm like, fuck, man. You know how many fucking millions of hit I could have had right now if I would have recorded every set? And then I start beating myself up. Like, it's never enough. Like, I'll have a set, and if I kill, I'm like, yeah, it went great, but I didn't record it. Like, it's gone. You know, it's gone for good. I kind of miss the old days in some ways of comedy, like how they were in like the 90s or even the 80s, where like you do a set, you don't have to worry about YouTube or viral or like even that. And, you know, you just do your set. And if you're funny, you're funny. It's based on reputation, and maybe you get on TV. But now it's like, I remember back when I started, you had to mail tapes, VHS tapes to the club, and then you had to call them up and be like, hey, every week, hey, did you watch my tape? Did you watch my tape? Did you watch my tape? You know, now it's like, send a link.
Yeah.
It's just a link.
Which is even more frustrating when somebody won't take the time to watch a link. You're like...
At the same time, booking the dime bar, though. Same time, booking the dime bar is hard because I just book guys who I know are funny, friends of mine. But I've had comics send me links, and I'm like, I don't want to watch your fucking link. Number one, I don't want to be the person to say, no, you're not funny enough to do my bar gig.
Yeah.
You know? At the same time, I'm not going to watch this because I know you're not going to do this set anyway.
Yeah.
And number two, it's like, who the fuck am I to judge you? I'm in a tight situation. If I don't know somebody, I'll be like, hey, is there anyone that you could tell me that can give you recommendation or something, you know? And then I'll give them up on that. But it's hard. It's hard booking this room in some ways because I don't want to say no to people. I still have that problem where I want to be liked by everyone, which is a shitty way to go through life, you know?
Yeah, you don't want to compromise the quality of your show, though. So but recommendations is a good way to book, assuming that the comics that are giving you recommendations, that you trust them and that they're not like, they're not just recommending their friend because they're their friend.
Yeah.
You know? Because I recommended somebody one time for a show, and I got burned, man. It was like a favor of a favor for a friend. He was like, hey, man, can you put this kid on for a guest set? I was headlining the club. I seen the kid do one set before, and he did well. And this is why I never judge a comic off of one set, because everyone, you might have seen the set of their life, or you might have seen the worst set of their life where they just ate it and they had a bad night. So I hate to judge anybody off of one set. But anyway, I recommended this kid. He bombed. He was so filthy dirty. He walked people. And I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe. Like, I put my word out for this kid and he.
I hate when I have like a big name come into the dime and they'll be like, hey, can you put me up right away? Which I want to do but then I'll know who's following them. I'll be like, I don't want that person to have to follow this person, especially if I know it's a newer comic. So I'll be like, all right, I'll put one more before you. And then that person walks people, and I'm like, fuck. So now the guy that I was trying to, what are you going to do? You can't please everybody. All right, so we are calling Don Fry for the third straight podcast.
Hey, hello.
Hey, Don Fry, how's it going? It's Adam Hunter.
Hey, Adam, how you doing, partner?
Good, you're on the MMA Roasted podcast.
Oh, man.
Yes, how's everything?
Holy balls.
Good. So what's going on, brother?
I'm over here at the VFW with Ron Kruk.
Oh, nice.
And a couple cameramen. Yeah, we're filming for Inside MMA for the Veterans Day, Memorial Day special.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
So. Yeah. What are you doing?
Just hanging out, man. I got a new show on Oxygen and just working hard, trying to be funny.
Oxygen, is that a bitch channel?
Yeah, it's a bitch channel, but some guys like it too. It's a pretty funny show. It's called Living with Funny, and I think you'll enjoy it.
Yeah. You make me laugh.
Hell yeah. So what do you think of Tito Ortiz? What do you think of Tito wanting to fight Royce Gracie?
Oh my God! Never heard anything about that.
Yeah, he said he wants to fight Royce for his last fight.
Oh, good. I'm all for that. Has he had his first fight yet?
He also said he also went to the Donald Trump rally. Are you voting for Trump?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. That's your sweet ass.
Why are you voting for Trump?
Because he's intelligent and he says it like it is. And, the guy doesn't have much tact, but he's got balls the size of a cannonball, church bells. You can trust him. You can't trust Hillary. You can't trust the socialists. Then we fought socialism.
Yeah.
What the hell is wrong with these people?
I agree with
that. You want to earn your own way.
But he doesn't believe
in... You want to earn your own way through life. You don't want somebody else to pay it for you.
I agree. But he doesn't believe in climate change, though. That's the only thing, Trump.
I don't either.
All right. There you go. So how's everything going? You still training?
No, I got... I got some problems in my own life right now, so, dealing with that crap, so...
Oh, man, sorry to hear that.
Yeah, a little busy.
Well, you are a legend, man. You're one of my favorite fighters, man. Your fight with Tekiyama was one of the greatest fights I've ever seen in my life. It'll still go down as the best fight I've ever seen, so...
Well, thanks, man, thanks.
No problem. So are you and John Kruk getting along?
Yeah, hell yeah. Ron's probably a little boy, man. I think I've known Ron for like around a decade, He's always a stand-up guy, street, had never lied to me. Always looks you in the eye when he talks to you, He's a good old boy.
Yeah. Well, now, what were your thoughts, by the way, on the Ken Shamrock, Royce Gracie fight?
I just saw the 10-second clip, where Royce kneed him up in the sternum and he said he got kneed in the balls and shit. I think Ken's got so much testosterone, his testicles probably the size of peanuts anyway, so it'd be a 1-in-a-million shot.
I agree with that. Now, the fight coming up, UFC 199. You like Uriah Faber or Dominic Cruz?
Well, I like Uriah Faber, as a little boy. And, we're kind of buddies. And, Dominic, shit, I got no use for him because, you know, my buddy, my hands guy, Rocco Ciottoli, trained him, taught him how to box, and he did an interview saying that he taught himself how to box in his garage, you know, so he didn't give credit where credit was due. So, haven't had a use for him since he gave that bullshit interview.
Yeah, that's bullshit, man. You always get credit where credit's due. I mean, that's, come on, give me a break.
You're damn right. I mean, you're like the 20th funniest guy I know.
Hey, man, it's a compliment.
The other 19 are in the coma or dead.
Oh, there you go. That makes me number one. Now, who do you think wins? You think Bisping's got a shot against Luke Rockhold?
No, I think, you know, he hasn't had enough time to train. You know, Luke's at the top of his game right now. You know, the guy's solid. He doesn't have any hold in his game. So I think it'll be a good victory for Luke. You know, but if Bisping had time to train, it might be a different story.
Now, a fight that was announced
might be competitive, you know, but
yeah,
this one's going to be a solid win for him.
Now, a fight that was announced this week was Stipe Miocic versus All-Star Overeem. Who do you like in that fight?
So it depends on how much horse meat Overeem eats, right?
Yeah, seriously.
How good the testing is. You know, Miocic, he's impressive. He shocked the world by knocking out Overeem. You know, I never guessed it. It happens. And he also... They say a fighter becomes 25% better once he wins the championship. So, how big is Alan Silver for right now anyway?
I mean, he's not as big as he used to. Do you think that once a guy takes steroids or TRT and then comes off it, how much mentally does that affect the fighter?
Well, how the hell would I know?
I'm just saying, I'm sure you know guys that have taken stuff that, you know, tried to fight after that, you know?
The only guy I know who does illegal things is you, you know. So
that's very true. Now, a guy that you fought, James Thompson, is fighting Kimbo Slice. Who wins that fight?
I'm gonna go with James because you know James is pretty good, big old boy, strong. If he's in condition, he's gonna win. You know, because Kimbo, I like Kimbo. I think he's a a hell of a guy. I met him about 8 years ago, and really, really nice. It shocked the hell out of me. Nothing like I expected. But I just don't think the last few fights, he hasn't looked good at all. Yeah. So, all James is going to do is just run a couple miles a day, and he'll be overall conditioning.
I agree. Like, he looked horrible against Dada. I mean, Kimbo looked fucking horrendous against Dada. That was one of the worst, best fights I've ever seen in my life.
That was painful. That was just painful.
Yeah, horrible. Now, do you think Cormier's got a shot against John Jones?
No.
Why?
No. Jones just outclasses him on every aspect.
Yeah.
You know?
My heart's with DC, though. I want DC to win based on, like, who I think is a better person, a better role model, a better champion. But John Jones might be the best fighter of all time.
He's a better role model, better champion, better this, that. I mean, that's all storybook fantasy bullshit, you know? It doesn't matter when it comes down to a fight, so who's a better fighter.
Yeah, but don't you think that sometimes, like, these guys, like Mike Tyson could have been one of the best fighters of all time, but all the extracurricular shit just got in the way of it?
Oh, definitely, because it's called life.
Yeah.
You know, and life throw you a bad turn every now and then. It just depends on how tough you are as a brother.
Yeah.
You know, you straighten up the vehicle, you know.
Now, by the way, so June 11th is the first bare knuckle world championship boxing between Shannon the Cannon Rich and Bobby Gunn. Ooh. Are you going to watch this fight?
This is the first I've heard of it.
Yes, it's bare knuckle boxing in Miami. Shannon Rich, the Cannon Rich, against Bobby Gunn, who's 72-0 in bare knuckle boxing.
Where is Bobby Gunn from?
We're Bobby Gunn from New Jersey.
But how do we know he's 72-0?
He says he's 72-0 in world in bare knuckle boxing. He actually, as a real boxer, he fought the likes of James Toney, Enzo Macarini. He fought some really good guys. He lost every time he stepped up to that thing, but he was still a world champion. Shannon Gunn, his record is 55-103. But according to him, they didn't count 120 of his fights.
Shannon Rich or Shannon Gunn?
No, Shannon Rich.
They didn't count 120 of Shannon's fights?
Yeah, he said he's really 210-103. But they didn't count a lot of his fights because they took places in, like, hotel rooms and stuff.
Was he fighting the transvestite or what?
I don't know. He just that's what's going on. So the bare knuckle boxing championship. I would assume that you would something. Would you be interested in fighting bare knuckle boxing?
Sure. Set it up. At least, yeah, I'll give it a go.
Do you want the winner?
Sure. How much does Gunn weigh?
Gunn's big boy. It's like 230, 240.
Wow. Yes. Set it up.
There's a $100,000 wager on it right now. So the winner gets $100,000.
Okay.
All right. So I will tweet out that you want the winner.
That's it, baby. Good way to tell them that. I usually fight for more than $100,000, but, you know, if it's... I don't have to lace up the gloves. You know, I'll do it for 100.
And how many bare knuckle? Now you were a boxing champion, right? Weren't you a Golden Glove boxing champion?
No, I did amateur boxing, then I did professional boxing. I had 8 professional boxing matches, but that was shit. That was, when the hell was that? 1989 or 90, something like that. 91. I don't know. It was quite a long time ago.
Yeah. But you're still in good shape, right?
Oh, baby, I'm telling you, I can make a calendar right now.
Well, Don Fry, thank you so much. Anytime a guest does not pick up, we're calling you, by the way. So if you hear answering machines, that's from us. So
I like the fat chick. You know, fat chick on dance night, right?
Yeah. Hell yeah, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, fat chick on Saturday night, can't get a date, so you call her up, right?
You're the fat chick, exactly. Don Fry, you're a legend, man. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, buddy, thanks a lot.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, that was Don Fry. Tyler, your thoughts?
Oh, that guy's fantastic.
I think he should be Trump's running mate. Tell me, Trump Fry, you wouldn't. I would have actually. Donald Trump,
I would rather fry Trump. But
Trump actually tweeted something recently that, like, he was like, they're making Indiana Jones without Harrison Ford. That's ridiculous. And they're making Ghostbusters with four women. What's going on, world? And
that we're losing our country.
That was the only thing that I've ever agreed with him so far. I'm like, can I vote for a guy based on his thoughts on the Ghostbusters reboot and Indiana
you
Jones?
You certainly can. There's a lot of one-issue voters out there. And that could be where you draw the line in the sand.
Seriously. So Trump has Tito and Fry on his cabinet. Yeah. So all right, we're going to call Tom Ryan, the coach at Ohio State University. One of the I tell you about Tom. He gave me he dragged me to wrestling camp when I was a kid.
Yeah,
he was Chris Weidman's wrestling coach. He taught Gian Violante. He's an amazing coach. Ohio State was a national championship. They won it last year. We'll see if he actually picks up this time. We've been trying him 3 times in a row. We'll see if he picks up. If not, we're calling Don Fry back. I didn't think that was actually going to pick up.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Hello?
Hello, Tom Ryan.
This is.
Hey, this is Adam Hunter. I'm here with Tyler Bowe. You know me as Adam Greenberg. How are you, man?
Hey, Adam. What's up?
What's up, man? You're on the MMA Roasted podcast. Finally got you. It took 3 weeks, but you know what? We got you. So,
you did it.
Yeah, how's everything going? You were in San Diego, right?
Yeah, we're in San Diego the whole week. Yesterday, we're up in L.A.
Oh, nice.
Day before that, down in Coronado. Yeah, it's been a nice trip, real nice trip.
Oh, nice. What are you in town for?
just family vacation for a week. Mm.
Nice. Now, Tom, I got
my wife
thank
was after the news yesterday. This, have you seen this guy Vitaly that climbed the D in Hollywood?
I did not see that.
Yeah, it was a news story. We actually happened to run into the guy. We were coming down from a trail walk up to the Hollywood side. On the way down, we ran into this guy. 30 minutes later, he was arrested by the police for climbing the. He's a YouTube prankster, I guess.
Oh my God, he's
climbing the sign, but. It's been a good couple of days for us. Good family time.
Nice.
So, now, beautiful out here.
Now, Tom, I want to thank you, man. Now, I used to go to your wrestling camp back at Hofstra, and it was pretty awesome camp. I used to go to your house first, and you would drive me to camp. I wrestled some great guys.
I remember you, man.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was awesome. And then, because Chris Weidman does not believe me, so we're going to set the record straight. That I went to camp, and it was right when you first came to Hofstra as the coach, and you put me, and you put me up against a couple of the Hofstra kids, and I took them down as like a high school senior, and then you offered me a scholarship. I went to the recruiting trip and stayed with Mike Quaglio, ended up going to SUNY Binghamton, but did you not offer me a scholarship to Hofstra?
You know what? To be honest, Adam, if you say I did, I did. I probably did. I probably was impressed with your wrestling and thought, let's go.
Nice. All right. So there you go, Chris Weidman. That was not a total confirmation, but it was somewhat of a confirmation. Now, Tom, back to the, now let's talk about
that
you.
That was 22 years ago, right?
Yes, it was about 22 years ago. Exactly. It's exactly what it was. And I stayed with Quaglio, and it was pretty awesome. I like won the Newbridge tournament, and you were like, you were actually impressed by the fact that I won the Newbridge and yada, yada, yada.
Newbridge,
Now you yourself wrestled for Dan Gable, correct?
Yes.
Now, what was that like?
It was, I think we all, you know, at the time I was just chasing a dream, right? And I think the lesson learned from it is the power in surrounding yourself with the right people. You know, not only does that have an impact on your current life, but it has an impact in long-term opportunities. And had I not done that, I'm not sure that my coaching career would be where it is now. So it was just a great opportunity.
I mean, your coaching career, you went to Hofstra, when you coached at Hofstra, you start off, they were 3-12. They were not a very good team. By the time you were done, they were ranked 7th in the country. Now, how do you turn a program around like that?
Obviously, in any organization, right? So a tireless work ethic is critical, and the right people. So the right people to develop the talent and the right people to get the talent. So, you know, at Hofstra, there were so many people that along the way jumped on and even drove the boat at times, you know, as we progressed to a national, you know, a real national competitor. You know, Long Island, I mean, as you know, being from Long Island has 110 schools that have wrestling, you know, and has wrestling and with 110 schools with wrestling, you produce some really good talent. So the key there was making sure that we could keep the best home from Long Island and then also cherry pick along the Northeast with New Jersey and Pennsylvania, you know, nearby. Things started to really happen for us. You know, I think the other thing, Adam, that was big for us was that, you know, we had an athletic director in Harry Royal that he told me when I got the job, we only had 3 scholarships when I got there. But he told me, if you guys continue to do well, that we will progress the support needed to really be competitive, because you just can't win if the guy above you is not hungry to do well also. So, you know, President Rabinowitz, President Short, and the AD, you know, they really committed to the sport, which was, you know, which was a blessing. You know, I think one of the biggest things that happened there in my time there, we went from 3 scholarships to the year that I left Hofstra to 9.9. And, you know, that was probably one of the things I was most proud of, was that as a collective group, we were able to take a sport at Hofstra from 3 scholarships to 9.9, which opened the doors for a lot of young people from a scholarship standpoint. So, yeah.
I mean, now a lot of the guys you had on your team ended up, becoming UFC stars, like Phil Baroni, right? He was a guy you coach. Now, by the way, Phil said you kicked him off the team or something. He said he actually wants to wrestle you. If you ever see him, he told me to tell you.
Phil?
Phil said he wants a wrestling match, you versus him. Just for the record.
It depends how long the match is. If the match is more than 4 minutes, I'll take it.
Okay.
If it's, he's my boy. Phil's a great, Phil was, obviously, a really good wrestler. I think he was a really good fighter too. Obviously Massapequa boy. And, so the longer the match, even despite the fact that I'm 46, the better the opportunity for me to do well against Phil.
Okay. All right. I will relay that message. But you also had Jay Haran, right? Jay Hieronymus was one. He was one of your guys.
Yep.
But didn't he get thrown off a team for like selling weed or something, or something happened with Jay Haran?
He did not. He did not. So he did not get thrown off the team for selling weed. There was a policy in place that with the school that he broke, unfortunately. But Hieronymus was another. Phil was a great talent, and Hieronymus, obviously at that time in my career, I did not think that how that went down was fair, but what happened. And he was a, obviously went into fighting, as did Phil and a couple other guys I've coached along the way too, but none with the success that Wyman's had. I think Lance Palmer's having some success.
Yeah.
But I knew early on. I mean, when we got Chris White, when I first wrestled him, I knew that he was an elite athlete.
I mean, Chris always says that he didn't try that hard in wrestling, and I was like, you didn't try that hard, and you took fourth in the, and you were an All American, like third in the country. How does a guy not try that hard and take third in the country?
Well, I think he's probably sharing his perspective now compared to then. So, by most standards, I would say that. He did try hard, but when you compare it to the way he's training now, he's probably looking at it and saying, you know what, well, from compared to what I do now, it's what I did back then. It's not even close. And I would agree with that. I would think the Achilles heel for Weidman was his overall professionalism about improvement. And, he was fifth and third at the NCAAs with a good work ethic, but not a professional elite work ethic. And I knew as he started to progress in the MMA world that if he really committed to his overall fitness level and his ability to learn, the sky's the limit, because he has speed, he has quickness, his hands are enormous, he has great strength, he has great speed, he's very athletic. He has all the intangibles. But what you need with it is this deep, deep passion to be great. And he clearly has that now.
Yeah. Now, how do you feel about guys going over to the MMA? Are you for it or against it?
I'm for it. I mean, I guess for it or against it is probably, I'm certainly not against it. I mean, it's an opportunity for people to earn a living, support their family. It's a competitive sport. I think early on it was a little rough with some things you could do. I think they toned it down a lot. Even the American public and worldwide public that loves a stiff competition, I think the headbutting and some of the things that were allowed, they took that out.
Right.
And it's the reality is that whether I like it or not, the train's left the station, and it's a huge hit. And I think it's brought some light to the artistry and the toughness and the skill level of wrestlers.
No, and that's absolutely, like, I've been coaching a middle school team out here for the last 10 years. I started a middle school program and a high school program over in Brentwood, California at Paul Revere. And I've noticed since MMA, you have so many more kids that want to do it. And the kind of thing where, like, the first day I'd be like, listen, guys, some of the guys that, John Jones was Frankie Edgar, and this guy was, and then just the eyes go up because they all know these people. Even with girls, when Ronda Rousey, I get girls that want to be the next Ronda Rousey. So I think it's great for the sport. It is hard.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
It is hard sometimes when you see an elite wrestler like Matt Hamill. I remember when I wrestled for Binghamton, I wrestled for Mark Gumbel. I remember going to my first tournament and seeing Matt Hamill come in. And Matt Hamill was such a great wrestler. And seeing him now still fighting, getting knocked out in 30 seconds, is hard to watch because you see how good of a wrestler they were back in the day. That's the only part where I'm like, when guys do it too long and they're getting knocked out, that's where it's hard to watch.
I mean, knowing when to say enough's enough is a big boy conversation that every man has to have at some point in time in their life when it comes to competing. And sometimes it's hard to let go. But there's no question. I think, you know, when I was a kid growing up, it was Hulk Hogan. I mean, literally, people got involved in wrestling. They thought that wrestling was what they saw on TV.
Yeah.
And whatever human being sees on TV becomes real life. And as a kid growing up, for me, it was professional wrestling, as people saw. There was no MMA. And now the reality is any kid growing up, you're going to see MMA on TV. And that's you hear wrestling and you hear the self-defense side of it. And, you know, I think overall it's really good for the sport.
Now, I always see some of your guys in the NCAA finals now for OSU, for Ohio State. And you never coach in the fight. You're always in like the back while your guys wrestling in the finals. Why is that?
Well, you know, now and then I'll sit in the chair. You know, the NCAA only allows two coaches in the corner. You know, and I think the thing for me is what's critical for me is that this isn't the Tom Ryan show. You know, this is about Ohio State. It's about student athletes. It's about a staff of people. It's about an army of people that it takes to create an environment for someone to excel at the level that we want them to excel at. To be elite, it takes an army. And, you know, it's a chance for my coaches to get some recognition. You know, the head coach always gets recognition. And the reality is there's a lot more people that go into helping these guys achieve than me. So, you know, again, now and then I'll sit in the corner. You know, we're trying to pass an NCAA rule this year that will allow three coaches in the corner rather than two. So, you know, but the bottom line for me is that I, you know, you have to model the way. You know, you've got to be an example. And I think an example in humility is that whether it's on national TV or not, you know, there are a lot of people on my staff that are tremendous. Jay Jagger is a great coach. Lou Roselli is a great coach. Ross Thatcher.
Yeah, but you're the head coach.
Travell Delegno. Yeah.
I mean,
what's that?
But you're the head coach. Are you worried that you're going to scream too loud and that it's going to mess up your wrestlers?
No, I'm not worried about screaming too loud at all. No, not at all.
I just
want to make sure. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought you were doing. I figured, oh, maybe he's worried that he's going to flip out too much and that it's just going to, you know, you're going to make the wrestler nervous or something. So you have to go in the back.
No, that's not it. But that makes sense. I mean, I definitely have it in me to be emotional.
Right.
So
now normally we co-host with Bubba Jenkins, who beat your guy eight times. How come you guys couldn't get past Bubba?
Bubba was a heck of a talent, man. Bubba was a great wrestler. I mean, I don't think anybody will forget the match with he and David Taylor.
Yeah, that was the best.
You know, obviously Bubba was at Penn State, left, went to Arizona State, that matchup at 149, where David ended up getting cradled there in the finals. You know, Bubba got us a few times, so... Yeah. Good for Bubba. He was a tough competitor.
Now your guy now, Kyle Snyder, who just beat.
Yeah.
He's the world champion. He beat the world champion. He also beat a heavyweight that was on an 88 match winning streak. Is this kid the best? One of the best heavyweights you've ever coached, or the best?
I would say that. I mean, well, certainly the best heavyweight I've ever coached. I think that when you're talking Kyle Snyder, you're talking about someone who thinks at another level. This is a guy who was a very young age, you know, made a pledge that he would, you know, make multiple Olympic teams. This is a guy that dreamed about winning an Olympic gold medal at a very young age. This is a guy that understands hard work. He understands character and decision-making. He understands reducing distractions in one's life. He understands hard work. He understands all the principles, all the non-negotiables, in going from good to great. And it won't surprise me if when he's done, he is in the conversation with every
every superstar that's ever taken to the mat is one of the best ever. And we're fortunate he's a Buckeye. He's a great, great leader. He's got 3.85. I mean, this guy just does things the right way.
Now, do you go against him in practice?
I mean, I'll help teach him, but I'll help teach him and challenge him and help him grow as a leader. But right now, Kyle Snyder, he's like a massive boat, and all you've got to do is you barely push it left or right. This guy knows what he wants. He's extremely mature, and there are some great things to come. And God willing, he'll be healthy come Olympic time. On August 21, he competes, and he'll win his first gold medal.
But a guy like that, who's in the room with him to get him better? It seems like that guy's the best guy in the room, correct?
Well, he's not. He's not, and that's the good thing. And that's what separates Kyle from so many. So many want to go into an environment where they're the king. And sliding into an environment where you're the king is probably the worst decision that somebody can make. You want to go into an environment where you're not the king and you're humbled and on a daily basis you're challenged. And when Kyle was coming out of high school, we ran a clinic at Ohio State, and he worked out there. And he worked out with five different people that were Olympic hopefuls that were training at our Olympic Training Center. And he knew then that Ohio State was the place he should train at, because he struggled. And he knew that he had to struggle for there to be the gains that needed to be made for him to get on Olympic team in 2016. So as a junior in high school, he committed to Ohio State. And in the room now, that the Olympian at heavyweight is in our room training. His name's Travell Delegnef. He was the Olympian in 2012. He's the Olympian in 2016. He weighs 265 pounds. He moves like a cat. And he really challenges Kyle Snyder. And the two of them kind of lift each other up. And there's a bunch of other guys as well. I mean, Miles Martin just won the Nationals as a true freshman at 174. That doesn't happen unless a human being is in the right environment. And we have that environment.
Wow. Now, you're doing a great job. Now, I got to ask you, your match against Pat Smith. Pat Smith was a four-time national champion, right?
Yes, he was.
And you lost to him 5-4.
And I was not.
Okay, you lost to him 5-4.
7-6.
7-6. 7-6.
7-6.
Now, how much did that eat you alive?
Well, at the time, it was, at the time, look, I mean, I think there's all perspective in mind. At the time, the word devastating is a word at the time that I would use in that, in that situation. You put your entire life into winning a national championship. You work day and night to attain that, and you don't attain it, and you lose in the last 25 seconds. It's a devastating experience. As you age and get older, now I'm not 21 anymore, I'm 46. I see things around me. You look at life a different way. Devastating is not a word I would use for losing in the national championship match. Devastating is what I experienced when I lost my 5-year-old son. Devastating is what, people experience, when they have heartache that is out of their control, that brings them to their knees, that completely brings them to a level of heartache and pain that's hard to imagine. At the time, though, for me, it was extremely painful.
Right. No, I mean, I'm sorry about what happened with your son, and you're a legend, Tom. You're one of the first real people to ever believe in me. So. Even though I didn't...
Well, you believed in you first.
Well, yeah, I believed in me too. But,
right? You kept coming. You were willing to get picked up in the morning early and come. You were pursuing something. And I think, people that pursue, they find ways to put themselves around the right people. People that stand by and kind of hope for the ship to come in, it never comes. So, you were one of those guys that pursued. And so hats off to you.
Well, if it wasn't for wrestling, I would never would have became a comedian and never would have done this, never that. I owe everything and anything that ever happens to me positive in my life, I owe to the sport of wrestling for making me, to keep me going. And it's guys like you that like are just pushing all these people and impacting so many people in such a positive way. So thank you, Tom.
I appreciate that.
Tom, thank you for doing what you do, man. Now, Gian Vellante, what happened with him?
Vellante, I love Vellante. Oh my gosh, MacArthur High School, a 220-pounder, super athletic. I mean, the reality with Vellante is that when you move like he moves, and you're that big and strong and athletic, sometimes you choose football over wrestling. He's a great football player. He was a starting linebacker at Hofstra. So, you know, I think that had he inserted himself completely into wrestling, who knows what would have happened? I mean, the sky was the limit for him.
Yeah, he's still a great fighter.
I think there's
He's a great, for sure.
He's a stud. I mean, the guy was he was an animal in high school as a wrestler. He's a great footballer. He's a great athlete. But, you know, I think regardless of who we're talking about, right, regardless of what athlete we're talking about, there are three components that you've got to have in place. Without the three, eventually your sustained success will falter. Sustained success is about three. There's three pieces to it in my assessment. And the first assessment, the first piece of prolonged success, not being good for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, being good for 50 years, you know, being elite for 50 years, it takes a work ethic that is unwavering, and nothing's going to get in your way. No matter how hard it is, no matter how tough it is, an unwavering, deep, hungry, sick-like work ethic. The second thing is talent. You need some gifts. And the third piece, I think, gets people more than any other piece, is a character piece, the ability to reduce distractions, the ability to make decisions that need to be made, not because they feel good at the moment, to run from the things that feel good at the moment and make decisions that will allow you to continue on a trajectory to be successful over a long period of time. And most humans get tripped up on the character piece. And you see that in business, you see that in sport, and you know, the ones around me that I feel comfortable and be great for long haul, the Kyle Snyders, the Nate Tomasellos, the Miles Martins, the Logan Stevers. I mean, these guys have an innate ability to just run from things that is easy, that's a world that the world wants you to fall in love with.
Yeah, so, like drugs and this and that and parties and...
What's that?
Like crazy women and drugs and parties, like stuff like that.
Yeah, of course, the love of money, the love of just the love of things that you know, can pull us and allow us to make some bad decisions. So now, right now,
Now, have any MMA people asked you to help train them in wrestling?
You know what? They haven't. They haven't. You know, there were some opportunities to do some stuff out in Vegas, teach some wrestling, but you know, that's not something I've ever moved toward. You know, I think one thing I've learned is master something. You know, master something. And my wheelhouse is college wrestling, and running a program, and I've really stayed. You know, it's easy for me to get distracted and. You know, move in a number of different ways. My team has always been, along with my family, the focus of my life. And as long as I'm in the sport, that's where it'll stay.
Gotcha. So who wins the rematch, Cormier or John Jones?
I'm gonna go Cormier. I think the last time I thought when they fought, whoever made weight better would win. I mean, nutrition and hydration and self-discipline in fights that long. You know, I'm kind of psychotic with where I'm training people to make sure that they're at the weight for an extended period of time. They're training at the weight they're going to fight at. I think that's critical. So the first time I thought whoever made weight better would win. And I, you know, I think highly of John Jones. I know he struggled with some things. And if he has these things in place, I mean, he is a unique fighter.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, Tom, it was an honor to have you on. Thank you so much, man. Thank you for all that you've done.
My pleasure.
Thanks for me and the sport. Thanks a lot, Tom.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Take care.
What a guy, man. That's that's a guy you could talk to probably for hours and hours and hours.
Yeah.
It was like when we had... Anna Maria on, Dr. Anna Maria, yeah. Rhonda's mom. She's just, God, you could talk to her for hours. So much experience and so much wisdom. And man, it gets like, I want to go wrestle right now.
I mean, he's so right with those three things, you know?
Yeah.
He's so right. I mean, just the work ethic is just so important. A little bit of talent, that's very important. And distractions, not being distracted. You know, like those, it's so basic. But it's just hard to actually do that.
But I think that's a perfect kind of metaphor for wrestling as a sport. It is, it's I don't want to say it's basic, but the thing that I, so I, like a lot of, to the listeners out there, I wrestled through high school, kind of went after the team in college, didn't end up wrestling through college, but did intramurals and stuff like that. But I feel like the sport of wrestling really shaped me and formed me and helped me get on like a good focused path and stuff like that. You learn so much, but it's a sport where like, I'm not a big guy. So there's certain sports where like, you know, football, you gotta be a big guy, or basketball, you gotta be tall. But like you in wrestling is the kind of sport where I always thought you could be as good as hard as you want to work.
Absolutely.
That's what it comes down to.
Comedy is very similar too, though.
So yeah, that work ethic is huge. And there's certain talent, you know, there's, you know, it, maybe it helps to be stronger or naturally faster or, you know, a little bit taller or whatever, but like there's always ways around it. I mean,
yeah, you gotta be a good problem solver.
And, but the sport of wrestling and why it's so functional is that it's the oldest sport. It's been around forever. So, anything that doesn't work has been stripped away.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't want to
I don't know. I was watching the NCAA finals this year and they were doing, people were doing some stuff, but that I had to watch it again and again and again. I'm like, wow, that I've never seen. There is some new stuff coming in that I haven't.
Flashier moves and stuff like that.
Flashier moves, more like cradle type, like more Gramby type moves, more like.
Hey, I use a Gramby roll.
Yeah, but
very
effective. I'm telling you, I watched the finals and I was like, whoa, a lot of funk.
Yeah.
That you don't really see, like the kind of like what Ben Askren was doing. He's ahead of his time. Yeah. Anyway, we have one more interview with this girl, Hadley Griffith. She, I met her at the Invicta fights. She fought, she was 8-4 as an amateur, as a kickboxer. She fought, Gilbert Melendez's wife. Yeah, we're going to go over that. We went over that last Monday. We'll go over again. And she, she's a sweetheart. She's 1-4 as a pro. So but she got a little work cut out for her, but, she loves the podcast. She said that she could relate to me as far as a lot of things. And, I'm looking forward to having her on the show. Relentless.
Hello.
Hello. Is this Relentless Hadley Griffith?
Yes, it is.
You're on the MMA Roasted podcast. Sorry, we're a little late. We had Tom Ryan on finally, and we also had Don Fry. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
Good. So I sat behind you at Invicta, and I was like, who's this girl? And you're a very, very pretty girl. You were fun to sit behind, and then you hit me up and you were like, listen, I liked your podcast. I could identify with you. And then I've been watching some of your stuff. What's going on with you?
Not a whole lot. Just, finally getting back into training. And yeah, I've been a huge fan of you for years and I've been listening to the podcast during the horrific traffic and from work every day.
Nice. Now, what do you do for a job?
I work at a warehouse. Basically, any polarized lenses and sunglasses like Oakley's, Ray-Bans, all of that, we supply all the lenses for.
Look at you. Wow, you're like a real-life Rocky. So you're working at a warehouse, and you live in Colorado, right?
Yes, I do.
And what gym do you train out of?
I train at 303 Training Center.
And is there any big fighters out of that?
J.J. Aldrich.
J.J. Aldrich, she's Invicta. Yes. She just called out. I actually looked at her on Twitter. She was very upset that Paige VanZant's in the new kickboxer. So she tweeted that out, that she should get someone who actually knows kickboxing and not Paige VanZant. So she was like, kind of a hater there. But okay, so J.J. Aldrich. Wait, J.J. Aldrich, the guy, right?
No, J.J. Aldrich's the girl on the Ultimate Fighter this season.
Yes, yes, yes. And she's an Invicta, right? Wasn't she an Invicta fighter? She's like 2-1.
Yes.
Yes.
Girl. She's an Invicta fighter.
All right. So she's your training partner?
Yes. I've got some really, the bruises I posted on Instagram the other day, those are from her.
Yes. I saw those. Those look very like you're okay. And then, so you grew up in Colorado?
No, I grew up, I lived in Washington from age 7 till 35. And then I moved here to Colorado.
What part of Washington?
Tacoma mainly.
Is that near you, Tyler?
That's close. I grew up in Portland, but isn't that where Misha Tate started and
Caraway?
Caraway,
yeah, yeah. And, all the
yep. And Misha's the reason I do MMA.
And why is that?
She texted me up one day. I'd been doing Muay Thai for a couple years, and she'd seen me at a fight card, and my phone rings one day. It's like, hey, I don't know if you know me, but my name's Misha Tate. I'm trying not to drop the phone. I'm like, yeah, I know who you are. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. How'd you get my number? Oh my God. And she suggested that if I ever wanted to try MMA, to hit her up, ask her any questions I wanted, any help I needed, just let her know. And she's what got me started into MMA.
So then you went to her gym?
No, actually, by this time, she had just moved out of Washington. She'd come back and train a lot over in the Tri-City area, the Yakima area, where she and Brian had their gym. And since I was living on the west side of the state, I found a gym.
Nice.
Now, I think it was like 10 minutes away. So.
Now, so you grew up in Washington. Did you play any sports as a kid?
No, I'm actually a horrifically bad athlete. I am totally clumsy. I trip over my own feet. I drive all my coaches crazy. I love playing games. I love playing sports. I love trying, but I'm always the most improved on the team because you can't suck worse than me when you start.
Yeah, I used to love those most improved. That means you don't suck as much as you used to, but you still kind of suck.
Pretty much.
Yes. I got you. So then how did you get into the whole sport?
My brother had been doing Muay Thai for about 10 years, and I heard on the radio in the car one day that there was going to be a Muay Thai event a couple blocks from my house in Tacoma. So I called him up and I told him to come with me so he could kind of tell me what I was watching. I mean, I grew up on Chuck Norris movies and Bruce Lee movies. I mean, in Hawaii, that's all we had was all the Asian martial art movies. So I'm used to all of that stuff and love watching it. Been watching the UFC for a few years before that. So we go to the Muay Thai fights. And he's all interested and excited and signs up at the front desk where the gym has a sign-up sheet, the gym that's putting it on. And I don't really care. I'm just there to watch some fights. And halfway through the card, there was this fighter named Jamie Shepard from the gym that was hosting the event. And he took this spinning back kick to the gut that sounded like somebody took a baseball bat to a telephone pole.
Wow.
And face didn't change, didn't, like, fraction of a second, started walking the guy down, didn't react at all. I'm like, okay, I want to do that.
Huh, wow. So you went in Muay Thai now, I saw that you were, as an amateur kickboxer, you were 8-4. So you had a pretty successful amateur kickboxing career. And then you recently had a fight with Gilbert Melendez's wife. What's her name?
Carrie Ann
Melendez. Now, is she a world championship kickboxer?
Felt like it.
So she's...
She's got Chris combos.
Yeah. Now, this was your first fight, though, right?
It was my first professional kickboxing fight.
Yes. Because I saw you on Spike. I saw the fight, and I was like, man, they're really feeding this girl to the lions. But I watched it again last night. You did land some good rights. You actually landed some good punches. But, hello?
Hello. I'm still here. Yeah.
Yes. You landed some. I mean, how did you feel about that fight?
That was actually the worst fight of my career, and there was a lot of bad stuff going on behind the scenes leading up to that.
What happened?
That being said, even if I hadn't trained in a year when I got the phone call. It was 5 weeks out from the fight. They weren't able to find anybody else. Carrie Ann's a smaller fighter than me, so they wanted me to do a catch weight at 120, and I hadn't trained in a year. I'm like, I need at least 121. I'm a 125 fighter, and I walk, 132. At the time, I was walking at about 145 pounds. And the month before, like 3.5 weeks before I got the phone call, I'd actually cut the top of my left middle finger off in an accident at work.
Oh, God.
And had to have surgery to have it reattached. So I am not the best and brightest. And I said, sure, I'll take the fight. Why not?
Jesus Christ.
And immediately, I'm not smart. I'm pretty, but I'm not smart. So I show up at the gym. I'm like, listen, I did something stupid. Now I need some help. And they did the best they could to get me back into shape, but I couldn't do any sparring. I couldn't hit. I couldn't even put gloves on because I just had the surgery and they weren't sure that it was going to take and that my finger was going to stay attached. So it was basically on the treadmill for 4 weeks and then 1 week of training and worst weight cut I've ever had. It was hard. I wasn't allowed to bring my coaches because the person who got the fight from me was my former coach in Washington and he didn't want them to come because he felt like, well, I would be uncomfortable because I don't know him. So I had nobody there that had been training with me. He disappeared as soon as we got to California because he's a huge fan of Tito's and MMA fighters in general. So he went to the fan fest instead of the weigh-ins. And
oh, God.
It was a night. The funniest thing, I think it was, I'm not sure who it was. It was either Liam McGarry or Phil Davis. After my fight, they're like, holy crap, that guy was your coach. I signed a bunch of stuff for him. I thought he was one of the fanboys.
Was his name CB Gold?
No,
CB. Oh, okay.
I spent more time with CB that weekend than my coach.
Oh, Jesus Christ. No, but I feel like all your fight, like your even the first fight you won, I watched your post-fight interview. You're like, yeah, you know, I got into an accident. I couldn't do any cardio. My leg fell off. Do any of your fights? Are any of them have good camps or anything or no?
Yeah, actually, quite a few of them do. I'm Irish, so if I didn't have bad luck, I wouldn't have any luck at all.
Right.
But the fight with Kerry was definitely the hardest. It was definitely the worst. And the thing is, even if I had been training, even if everything had gone well, even if I had been closer in weight and the weight cut wasn't hard, even if I had my coaches there, she's so good. Honest to God, I don't think I would have won that fight, but it would have been a very different looking fight. It would have been two-sided instead of I'm a punching bag for three rounds.
Right. Right. Well, you know what? Listen, you got to learn. Sometimes you have to learn by failure. And then, you know, every set that I've gotten better at, it's because I bombed and then I learned what could I have done better. And I do like the fact that like you hit me up and you're like, listen, I have OCD as well. You talked about your OCD, and that really meant a lot to me. I don't know if I'm going to tell everyone that you have OCD, but that really actually, I feel like we really connected on that. So thank you for sharing your struggles with me.
Thank you. It's nice to know I'm not the only one out there, especially in a sport like this. It can be hard. I mean, there's times I'll bring three or four shirts to the gym because after each class, I can't wear a sweaty shirt. I can't roll with somebody with a sweaty shirt on. I'm like, sorry, I stand here, let's switch.
No, okay. I mean, those are some of your things. You like wear too many shirts. What are some of your other tics?
I've gotten a lot of it under control, but you know, some days are worse than others. If I'm at work and I'm having one of my off days, I have to rearrange all the boxes so that they're all facing the same direction. Where everybody else just kind of throws boxes on the shelf or throws it into a packing box, everything's facing the right way. Everything's facing the exact same way, and it makes me a harder worker because I still have to get good numbers, good times on the work that I'm doing, but to take extra time to organize everything.
I used to work the stock room at Banana Republic, and I had to put the sensos in where like the things that you put in so that you can't. And,
yes.
And for some reason I was convinced that I stuck myself with the senso, and I'm like, well, what if I have AIDS? And then someone else sticks with themselves and they're going to get AIDS. So I threw away all the sensos, and they were like, what happened to your, I'm like, so I know it could be really tough at work. Like, you should start like imagining these ridiculous scenarios in your head, and it was that was really hard. So I can identify with you. We definitely will never date because it was it would be a 9-hour. Now, do you have a boyfriend or?
I do not. What's funny is what started me cluing into you sitting behind me was I turned around, I saw you, and I almost dropped my water bottle. I'm like, slapped my friend. I'm like, see, that's the kind of guy I think is hot. That's what they look like when I think they're hot. They look like him.
Aww.
I'm eavesdropping. Thank you. Yeah. I was eavesdropping and pretty said girlfriend. I'm like, okay.
Thanks. Of course I find this out now that I have a girlfriend. This never happens, Tyler, when I'm single. These hot fighter chicks that, you know.
First it was the Chinese professional pole dancer.
Yeah,
now
it's the hot
fighters.
Fighter chick.
you can't win.
It's ridiculous. Now your record is 1-4. We gotta fucking get this up, okay?
Yes.
What do we gotta do? Because you're obviously a talented fighter, you're a good striker. What belt are you in jiu-jitsu?
I just moved down to Colorado with a white belt. I've worn a gi twice. I hadn't really ever trained on the ground. That's why I moved to Colorado. I had training. I was at a kickboxing gym.
Okay.
So
we're gonna fight strikers from now on. All right.
No, strikers won't fight me.
Strikers
won't fight me. I try.
How's your wrestling?
Yeah. It's getting better.
Okay. All right. Getting better. Okay. So wrestling's getting better. Do we have a good wrestling coach?
There is a great wrestler at 303. His name is Zach.
Zach what?
Chavez.
Zach Chavez. Is he a pro fighter?
He is a fighter. I don't know if he's pro.
Okay. So we got Zach Chavez helping me with wrestling. Who's your jits coach?
Professor Tony Basile, you've probably seen him cornering Rose Namajunas on her UFC fight.
Yes. Okay, so we're getting better on the ground. Okay, and then we have good strikers in the gym?
Very good strikers. The girls, it's the first time in years that I've actually had people back me up in sparring, and it's
It's been great.
Okay. All right. So we fight at what? 120, 125. That's our weight
125.
Class? 125. Okay. Now, do you have any fights lined up or are we looking for a fight?
I don't. I'm going to wait probably till the fall. I want to get.
Hello?
Get you in.
The fall. Okay.
Hi, I'm still here.
Okay. So the fall. All right. So Relentless.
Yep.
Okay. We're going to have Relentless is going to fight in the fall, hopefully against a striker. And we want to do like a small promotion in Colorado Springs.
There's a one that's up here in Denver. They do. We got the Spartan Combat League up here.
Right. Do you know Connor Hune?
I do not.
All right. Connor Hune was my old wrestling coach. We used to coach together. He's a black belt under Eddie Bravo. He trains over in Colorado Springs. He trains wrestling. He moved from LA to he fought KJ Nunes. He fought George Grigel. He fought Ryan Couture. He lost to all those guys, but he fought them. He's a good fighter. He's a great fighter. I thought he actually beat a couple of those. I thought he beat KJ definitely. And the Grigel fight was very, very close. Look up Connor Hune. Because he's a wrestling coach over in Colorado Springs. He will get you much better at wrestling. So Connor Hune,
that would be awesome.
Yes, I'm gonna. He's a really good friend of mine. He's one of my best friends actually. So I'm gonna, after this, I'm gonna text Connor. I'm gonna put you guys together. Don't sleep with him. I think he's married. Okay. but we are gonna.
I don't mess around with people at the gym. So we're good.
Oh, good, good, good. All right, cool. Now, all right. So listen. Where can people find you?
They can find me at Twitter and Instagram at Flying Darce and Facebook Relentless Hadley Griffith.
Okay, cool. By the way, your Instagram has 4 posts. You're the worst. You are the worst. And you are less than a white belt at Instagram. It's actually worse than your ground game is your Instagram. So we have to. We have to pick that up. Tyler, anything?
Oh, I was going to say, I'm guessing we can probably also find her at the laundromat if she's wearing 4 shirts per workout. Probably doing a lot of laundry.
Nice.
No, Adam will tell you, we cannot use public washing machines. We can't.
Well, no. No, absolutely
no,
not.
No public washer dryers.
Absolutely not. Yes, it's true. Well, listen, it was a pleasure having you on the show, Hadley. You're a beautiful lady. Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you. Take care.
You too. Bye.
What's up, Tyler? Sweetheart, huh?
Yeah, she seems like a nice girl. I hope she has a good, healthy training camp for her next fight.
I do too.
It sounds like she's had some stumbling blocks in that department, taking short notice fights and fighting with like injuries and stuff like that. That's not a recipe for success.
No, she also needs a real wrestling coach. I mean,
yeah.
Having a good wrestler at your gym is not exactly. I mean, come on, you got to have a good wrestling coach.
This is why fighters need a tip of fighter. They need to have the ability to get a good
team around them
and not have to work full time jobs. Because this day and age, you can't. I mean, if you come in with a strong discipline, she's obviously Muay Thai is her strength. If you come in with a strong discipline, you might win a few fights, but you're not going to go far unless you have wrestling, jiu-jitsu, Muay Thai, boxing. You got to have.
That's what Tom Ryan was saying. He learned from Gable. You got to surround yourself with the right people.
You got to have it all.
You know, this girl, she is pretty hot. She actually is. She's really hot. She's a beautiful girl. I mean, you know, my girlfriend's prettier. But because she might be listening to this,
maybe she could do a calendar with Dawn Fry.
She's really pretty, and sweet as hell. I was sitting with this guy Garote. We were at the fights together, and this guy Jerry, he's a super cool guy, and she was cool, and we were having a good time. But yeah, the fights this weekend. So Sunday night, we have Cody No Love is taking on Tomas Almeida. That fight has fireworks all over it, man. I really hope Cody wins because I'm thinking about driving back to Vegas and I want to go to his after party. And after parties, when a guy loses, they're never fun. So that's a big fight on the card. The Sarah McMahon, Jessica I. Ooh, I hope they both win. That fight I can't call. Sarah McMahon is fucking jacked.
Yeah, that's a tough call. I don't know. I think I'd go with I maybe in that fight, but.
But wrestling, I mean, wrestling, you know, Sarah has the wrestling advantage. And then, like, you know, Jessica's a striker. That's the only thing. But on the feet, absolutely. Jessica's got the advantage on the feet. It's just a matter of can she keep it on the feet. Jiu-jitsu wise, I think Sarah's got the advantage, although Jessica's got good jiu-jitsu as well. It's just a matter of can she keep it on the feet.
Yeah.
If it stays on the feet, Jessica wins. If it goes on the ground, Sarah, I think. I mean, I've been wrong plenty of times. Who else is on the card?
We got Hannah Barrow, Jeremy Stevens.
Ooh, yeah, we talked about this on Monday.
Did you run down these already?
Yeah,
we went through the whole card. I got all excited last night. I was going through my picks.
Anything you want to do? Let's run through your Tyler's picks real quick.
At the top of the card, I'm gonna take Cody, man. I know Almeida's 21-0, which is crazy in this sport. But Cody, I think, is just. He's looking like a crusher, man. And if he can land, I think he puts him out. I mean, I think the fight's going to be crazy. Next on the card, Hennen Barrow. You know, he hasn't looked great in the last couple, but like I think people are forgetting that he went on like a 33-0 streak for like forever.
Beating a lot of good guys.
I know Jeremy Stevens is a tough dude.
So you're picking Barrow.
I got Barrow.
I got Stevens. I think his mentally he's not the same fighter.
Saffanine Story. That's I think the best bet there is that it's going to go to a decision because both those guys are big decision winners or fighters. I like Rick Story. I think he's just a tough, grindy kind of dude. I think he gets it done.
Okay.
Kamozi Miranda. I'm gonna go with Miranda, man. I have a hard time. I mean, Kamozi went on like a 5-fight skid at one point, and I know he's fought a lot of tough dudes, but damn, like that's. You know, and he came off of, like, but his last fight, like, who'd he beat? Joe Riggs?
He knocked him out quickly.
Yeah, but.
But Joe Riggs was already, like.
Looks like a ghost.
Yeah, he was falling down on the way to the octagon.
I like Miranda, and he's, what, on 3 KOs in a row?
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard. I mean, I can see him putting Kamozi's lights out. I really like Masvidal Larkin. That's going to be, I think, a great fight. I'm going to go.
Fight of the night. I'm calling it.
Yeah? I got Jorge in this fight, man. I think he's.
Yeah, me too.
He's good. I think he's got to keep it standing. He's had trouble with strong wrestlers. Can't really.
Larkin's not a wrestler.
No, I was trying to think of Lorenz's ability on the ground, but Jorge's. He's a handful for anyone, man. I think he takes it.
Yes. Is the fight at 170, though?
Yeah, 170.
No, Lorenz, I think Jorge's a 55.
See, that's the one thing that got me is Lorenz is coming down and Masvidal's going up.
Yeah, I think at 170, Larkin's too big.
Yeah.
Go on.
He's a handful. Berkmanfelder, Felder. I like Felder.
Felder.
Yeah, he's just, his record I don't think speaks for how good he is.
Oh, yeah.
He had that crazy fight of the night with, the British guy,
Brazilian guy.
Guy,
yeah. He looks like the kid who peed himself on American Pie.
Felder,
yeah, he looks like what's that kid's name? Who peed himself, Brian, you know, the Shermanator.
Yeah,
he looks like the Shermanator.
If the Shermanator was jacked,
yes.
No, I think, like I said, I think Felder's better than his. I mean, he's 11-2, which is not bad, but the two fights he lost, I think, were
yeah.
Anyway, I like Felder there. I already said going down.
All right, those are Tyler's picks.
Yeah.
Anybody else?
No, I'm just saying there's a couple fights in there, but I'm really not too familiar with the guys. Eric Koch, he's coming off like almost 2 years off.
Yeah, but he's good. He's out of Rupesport.
Yeah, I think he gets the win. Who's against Shane Campbell.
Oh, Shane Campbell from Canada. Campbell's coming on the podcast next week.
Sterling Caraway is a tough call.
That
man.
One is the fight that I like both these guys as human beings.
Yeah.
You know, I like Caraway. In this fight, though, who do I? I don't know. I call it a draw. I mean, you got to go experience versus talent. You got to go. Aljamain's the more talented fighter. He's the more just natural abilities. But Caraway has seen this before. He's been around forever.
Yeah.
And he's only lost to the elite of the elite. If you look at the guys he's lost to, he's only lost to the top guys. And he's always put up a fight. I mean, the Dotson fight he got knocked out on. I mean, you could say that. But he's, I don't know. This is a tough one.
I know. I always kind of fall back on strength of resume and like who guys have fought. I think Caraway obviously has been in the cage with the stronger fighters. But then there's also something to be said for the confidence and the momentum that you have coming in. Like, Sterling coming, he's like 12-0.
Yeah. This one's tough.
Yeah, I think it's going to be crazy. And I think if it goes the distance and Caraway can grind it out and maybe get him on the ground, then he takes it. But if it's a crazy banger.
I think Caraway could sub him.
Yeah. But
I also think that Aljamain could hurt Caraway and have him on Queer Street early, too. So this is going to be a good fight. Listen, I think it's our podcast. You have to go early, right?
Yeah, I got something to be in a little bit.
Anything coming up, Tyler?
I'm just staying local for the next couple weeks. Then I'm moving up to the Northwest, mid June. And then I got dates at the, Tacoma Comedy Club. I'm at, the Spokane Comedy Club. I got laughs in Tucson all coming up in July, August. So, it's all up on my website and I'll tweet it out and put it out on Facebook. So.
Nice. Well, I want to thank our sponsor, Tip-A-Fighter. Go to tipafighter.com. Fighters are underpaid, and we can make a difference, okay? Fighters, you want to get paid more? Join Tip-A-Fighter. Have the fans tip you. I know as a comic, I love getting tips. And it's cool to it's cool to actually, when a fighter's on Tip-A-Fighter and I give them money, I'm sure they appreciate it. And I enjoy giving them money, and I'm sure a lot of fans feel the same way. Now, I will be at the Dime Bar every Tuesday night in Hollywood, Tuesday at the Dime Bar, and then I'm going to be at the Ice House tomorrow night, headlining the 10 o'clock show at the Ice House in Pasadena. Next week, I'm going to be at the Laugh Factory on Sunday night at 6 o'clock. I'm doing a show with Nick the Tooth, Dana White, Matt Serra, Brian Callen, and David Spade.
Hell yeah.
At the Laugh Factory. I also have, I'm going to be at the Ha Ha the night before 199.
You think you can get me into that show? The Laugh Factory?
Like into the show to watch?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. At the Ha Ha UFC 199, I will be, the night before, I will be at the Ha Ha Comedy Club, as well as coming up, the Stratosphere in July. Hit me up for tickets if you're going to be there for UFC 200. I'll be at the Stratosphere the whole weekend before the UFC fight weekend. And I have shows coming up in June in Rochester, New York at the Comedy Club, as well as the Comedy Cave in Calgary. And in July, I will be in Fresno, as well as Hollister. So thank you guys so much. This is our last show with Sideshow Network. Starting next week, we are doing shows out of my apartment. I built a studio, and there will still be shows twice a week out of my apartment. I think we have Frank Mir coming into my apartment next week. We're going to have it. We're going to try to do it. I got video cameras. We're going to try to make sure it's on YouTube and do the whole thing, as well as Periscope. And we're going to have the live fights. We're going to try to do a fight companion type show to the bare knuckle boxing. CB's giving me his flat screen, and we're doing it. We're going to have me, you, and Greg. And Greg Wilson's back in June. So don't worry, guys. I'm not going anywhere. A lot of you guys think that, like, hey, Adam, I'm not going anywhere. As long as you guys listen, I'll be there to speak. So thank you guys so much. Follow me, Adam Comedian, or at MMA Roasted. And take care. Have a great weekend.